Olivier Gruner, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm good, mate. Yes, great to have you here. It's all right, we've been trying to get through some technical difficulties, but we finally arrived at the Art of Action Olivier Gruner
Thank you.
special.
That was a kind of an adventure.
That's all right. The audience will never know what happened, but it's me and you. Me and you know what's gone on. Well, Olivier, thanks for doing this. I grew up as a teenager in the 90s watching martial arts movies coming out left, right, and center. And you were right there in the peak of it, leading the charge with Angel Town and Nemesis and all the other movies that followed. So thanks for coming on and chatting to me. I love talking to the 90s era guys the most, to be honest, because that's when I was a teenager and really, really soaking it up. So it's a pleasure to have you on.
What's funny about the 90s is I think the reward, I think, by making movies is really try to inspire the other people. It's not the glamour of being on the screen, but if you can inspire people, I think that's really what it's all about at the end, And I got inspired by other people too, Like you inspired a lot of people too. So it's great. It's good from one generation to another one to another one, especially with martial arts. So it's really a this is the most rewarding things when you inspired other people. So
Well, you definitely inspired me, mate. I'm looking forward to hearing about your martial arts journey. And I don't know as much about you as I want to. I know you've got a big past in the military and obviously kickboxing, but can you take me through the martial arts journey?
yeah. So when I was 11 years old, it was the first year of high school. And I was living in Paris. And in the middle of Paris, my high school was a high school. It was in the first arrondissement, which is, it's an old Paris. So the streets are very narrow and they're very dark, right? And one day I got attacked, by three guys. And they asked me for my lunch money or whatever I had. And as 11 years old, it's I never seen violence before, so I didn't know, So I obviously, of course, I give him whatever, but they roughed me up a little bit, and I was embarrassed. So I never told my parents, of course, they never knew about it, but I was embarrassed because I was not a man, right? Supposed to be a man and back. So I was not a hero. So I just went home and I start to think, well, I got to do something. My parents were never, they are not fighters. They are not like they are more intellectual people. So it was so different for me, and so I start to bulk up. So I start to work out, and I wanted to do boxing because this is what we had around. It was in what is it? 70s, the early 70s, 71, because I was born in 60. So we didn't have the gyms that we have now. If you wanted to go to the gym and pump up, you needed the gyms were available only for people who got sick or had a problem with their joints or their muscle atrophy, something just to, but it
Oh,
was not
really?
like a gym. We go, yeah, it was so different. We didn't have the only gyms we had was like boxing gyms, karate gyms, and that was really what we had, judo. So I asked my dad, say, I want to go and learn boxing. He said, no, you're not going to learn boxing because, getting punched in the head is not a good thing. In terms of martial arts, I didn't learn anything, because I could not go to a karate school. So I joined the military when I after high school. And this is where really I got introduced about, to really not only martial arts, but, fighting. And we did a little bit some hand-to-hand combat, close quarter, close combat, but it was not really like, it was basic stuff. After the Navy, when I'm done, this is where I start to really be passionate. So, and I saw a Bruce Lee movie and I was fascinated. When I watched that little guy, kicking people's butt, it was great. I was like, I want to be like that guy, right? So I
Yeah,
start
didn't we
learning
all?
and, he inspired so many people,
Yeah.
and then I start to go to I start to learn by myself, and I was reading a book. So I had this book, and I look at the picture, and I read whatever the description was, And I started learning how to kick, you know. So I was watching myself in the mirror and I was imitating whatever it's, you know, was on the book. And I did that like 5 hours a day. I'm not kidding, 5 hours a day. And I was really focused on the perfect kick. You know, when you do psychic, make sure, you know, your heel is and you hit with the side of the foot, you know, and he has to be down a certain way. And I was kicking over and over. So I really worked on the through the mirror. That's what I did. So that was my first
time. See, kids, back in those days, you had to learn fighting from books, not YouTube. Back in those days, yeah.
Now
just from pictures.
Yeah, it's fantastic now. You can get
it. Yeah.
So
I know. But hang on a minute. Just to talk about the military for a bit, what was the inspiration for going in the military? And what was, which part of the army was it?
It was the Navy, the Navy SEAL, the same thing that you guys, you have...
like the SAS.
Yeah. So we went to... you joined the Marine. It's called La Marine. And then from there, you go to the Green Beret. And then when you get the Green Beret, you get assigned by different... in different group. And I was assigned in different groups. And then that group, you know, we did different things. We assault boats in the middle of the ocean. We did some mission in Africa. We did some mission in different places, you know.
I don't mean, it's always a difficult thing to talk about the army. You don't want to pry too much, but I really want to know, like, how hardcore were you, you know? So is the French equivalent of the SAS or Navy SEALs, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
High level,
yeah,
like heavy duty stuff. So how many years did you spend in the armed forces?
I did 4 years total, which is very short. Okay. And the reason for that is because we did some mission, but we were not at war. So all the missions were covert mission, you know. And but it was not maybe like once, twice a year. So it was not enough for me. But that was hardcore. I mean, I can see how tough I was compared to what I am now. I'm way weaker mentally. But at that time, I was super tough mentally. You could not stop me. I was unstoppable. Like I said, sometimes, you know, they take us in the middle of the ocean. We didn't know which ocean we were in. And we got dropped in we are tied up with another guy in the middle of the ocean, and you have to reach the shoreline. And sometimes we have missions, sometimes we don't have missions. We were shipped in into the middle of the ocean. We took a boat to reach the shoreline. And then actually before we reached the shoreline, we had to swim to the shoreline. So got dropped in by helicopter into a boat. We took the Zodiac. They dropped us off, and then we had to swim to the shoreline. And we had a time issue. The problem is, obviously, when we do that at night, but sometimes we don't, if everything is postponed for whatever reason, like, example, the helicopter is late or the boat is late, then what happens is the current change. And when the current change, now, instead of taking maybe like an hour to get to the shoreline, it would take 2 to 3 hours. And then what happened is, like, then the sun starts to come up. Then it changes all the circumstances, you know, for us to do the mission.
Yeah.
So sometimes when you, and that's something I learned, like, in life, like, things are going to change, you know, even if you plan things perfectly, things are going to change when you do the real mission. So just be aware to adapt yourself to whatever you got to do. So we did that. We did some mission in Africa. I got captured in 1979. So we
captured.
Captured for 3 hours. So
okay.
We were going through from the camp to in Djibouti. That was in Djibouti to the town. It's not a town. It's a little village, and we got under attack. My guys went all over the place, and I went one way, and there was a cliff. I turned out, I was on the ground, I was bleeding. Guys, they picked me up. The bad guys, I mean, bad guys. Let's don't call them bad guys because it's not fair. The people have picked me up, and there's something that I remember, and I would remember for the rest of my life, is like being a tough guy, right? How come I didn't fight back? Well, the reason is because when they grabbed my hand, they didn't grab it like this. I would react from that. They grabbed my hand very gently and they guide me. So there's one guy who grabbed my hand and then another guy and then another guy. And, you know, they start to, you know, just do some stuff with, you know, sticks and stuff, beat me up a little bit. But it's funny because I didn't feel anything. I really don't, you know. And then I remember, I can't remember the time. That's something I can recall. The only thing is I can remember just certain things. And I remember something really clearly is an old man be sitting down. I remember a fence and an old man sitting down, you know, like they sit in Africa, you know, like low to the ground and their butt on the ground and their knees up.
Yeah.
And
squatting.
Yeah, exactly. And they were talking to each other. I didn't know what they were saying because it's a different language, right? And this is where I felt my hand going down, and this is where I start, you know, bailing out. And so when we went back to the camp, I was kind of embarrassed, to be honest with you. I was not like it really, really troubled me because it's like, you know, when you play tag, I got the guy who got tagged. You know what I mean? So I was the loser of the group. You know, the other guys.
Yeah, because you got captured.
Yeah.
Well, I think, listen, the main thing is you got back in one piece. That's the main thing, yeah. Right?
Well, if they took me to the village, I would have been in big trouble. You know, I would be done. Because that old man, you know, save, you know, that God, you know, watching for me or something. He said, maybe I'd better bounce for you. Yeah. There's a lot of luck in life, you know. But again, you know, all this stuff is experiences, you know, that followed me through my life, you know, and but there's something that I really took from that is you can't count on anybody else and yourself. And that's really important. Doesn't matter. You can't say, oh, people, they're going to help you or people, they're going to save you. It's not going to happen. You're going to count on yourself. So that's really important. This is what I got out of it, you know.
Did you have many fights growing up or anything like that? Were you a tough, like, kid in that sort of way? Or did you wait to do that professional fighting until you did martial arts?
No,
I know that's a loaded question. I'm just interested.
No, it's good. But, you know, listen, I didn't want to fight. No, because my mind was not like... So remember, this is after the Navy, right? So we're talking about being a kid. Now, being a kid, I was pampered by my parents. And, you know, I think the world is beautiful with a bunch of flowers and stuff. So it just when I got to school, I realized it's a little bit different. You know, the world is tough.
Yeah.
You got to survive, man. Be a man up. And this is when I went totally the opposite way. So I was a nice guy. And then I started to be tough. But I wasn't tough against other people. I was tough with myself. And that's a big thing, you know.
So what were the main styles for you?
Shotokan. The first thing was Shotokan, so which means like traditional, very rigid style. And I, Jean-Pierre Laverato was my instructor at that time. I was super lucky because this guy was fast. It was amazing. I mean, in terms of it was so traditional. If you had to stand in your gi, you said, you have to wash your gi and come back when it's cleaned up. So he was very strict with everything. So he was like, the discipline was.
Well, you were already used to that, though, to be fair.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was taking any seminars that he had, I was going to, you know. So I was spending a lot of money, you know, just learning martial arts. And it was a passion. I didn't want to fight anybody. It was my passion was not, you know, I didn't do martial arts because I wanted to beat up people. It was more the philosophy behind the martial arts. That was really important, you know. Be tough so that you don't have to use it, you know. If you think about life, you know, when somebody challenges you with everything, if you know you can't kill him in a second, why would you do it, you know? You don't do it. You don't have to give to anybody, yourself to anybody. So that was the point. So then I went to the Alps and I tried to find a club and there was no club, you know, as good as Laverato. So this is where I started kickboxing. So they had a great club in Switzerland, and I trained with a guy who used to be your champion, and then I went to Dominique Valera, which was the best at that time in France. It was a Chuck Norris. Yeah, and then I trained. I did a couple of fights, and I won the fights, and I and then I became, you know, I started to be in the French team. But I was training in the U.S. too. I was going back to the U.S. and trained boxing at the Glizens gym, because for me, the French were really good with kicking, but they have a lack of boxing. You know, I went to the best club in. If people know the Glizens gym, it's the best club in the world. I mean, that's the, at that time.
So you've got really clean kicks, perfect technique, the side kick as you talk about. And did it come naturally to you, the kicks? Because you, I suppose you didn't have a lot. It's not like you started martial arts when you were 10, like me. You're starting at 22. Did it, were you just natural at it?
You know, it's very interesting. This is the best question ever. It's like, I think everybody has a gift, but until you find your gift, you will not know how good you are. Like some guys, you know, you can play golf for all of your life, and this guy comes in and take the golf, boom, and he has it. For whatever reason, he's gifted. For me, it was the same thing. When I started to compete, I had maybe like 6 months of training, and I was beating guys that had like 9 years of training. So I had that inside of me. It's something, you know.
Yeah.
It came naturally.
It just came naturally to you, and you had that thing, and you picked it up like that.
Picked it up, and that was it. No, a lot of work. Don't get me wrong. You know, I worked a lot on it. You know, I spent a lot of time, a lot of money. You know, I invest a lot of money in my training. And so we don't realize that. You know, a lot of guys they say, well, they're lucky. They go into films, you know, and they make a lot of money. But you don't know what we have done before that. You know, it was a lot of work.
You were a bouncer in Cannes and somebody spotted you, and then that led to Angel Town. Is this true?
Well, let's come back into the truth here. First of all, I was not a bouncer. I was a security dude, which is different. Well, you're kind of the same.
Oh, that's close enough. Yeah.
I got a job as a controller security guys, you know, when you go to Cannes, you know, if you want to go inside the theater to watch a movie, you need to present your card. So that I was the guy who was stopping people, you know. But Dave said to me, he said, why don't you put the poster, your poster on the wall, you know, like just on the wall of the theater. I said, okay, sure. So I put it in. And there's a guy, Dale Mahaja, looked at it and said, who's that? And said, well, that's me. So he touched my muscles. So, oh, good. I'm going to contact a company that is looking for somebody. And that was Imperial. Mm. And at that time, Van Damme was too busy. So it was a time where, you know, with the videotape. So you make a martial art movie, you make tons of money. So they needed guys at that time. So I was there at the right time, at the right place. So they asked me, if you come to Los Angeles, come and see us. And we would like to interview you. Maybe you'll be good for, you know, starting a movie career.
And so, any aspirations to get into the movies before that? Something you were thinking about pursuing, or
no. Movies was not the. It was more like having a gym in Los Angeles or in California. That's it.
Okay,
that was my dream. I wanted to train so bad with Bill Wallace, with Jeff Smith, Joe Lewis. You know, all the old timers.
Yeah,
it was my dream. Really, it was really to reach the top of my. Of my art, you know, that's what I wanted to do, really.
And this is good stuff. This will get you pumped up like a Rocky movie. Is this your own kit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was Stan the Man here. He's a world champion from Australia. Really good guy.
Okay.
Yeah, so we went to the gym and said, let's do all the training that you're doing. So this is what I did. So jump rope was really important in the training. So we did that for a while. Yeah. Then we did some sparring.
And what's great about this sequence is the music as well. The music's really cool.
Well, so the sweep is from Valera, Dominic Valera. He's very famous for that sweep. Oh. I learned it from him.
Yeah. Is this free sparring, or because you're with your friend, are you setting up some nice moves for the camera?
No, it was both. You know, sometimes it was free sparring, and sometimes, you know, it was like, example, this kick we did a few times. You know, when we did something cool, the directors, Eric Carson, said, "Let's do that again." You know,
that's a good back kick. That is,
yeah,
really great. That's the technique I'm talking about. Perfect technique, keeping the heel higher than the toes, right?
Yep.
There's the Thai boxer.
Yeah. So.
Very fast.
The kick at the end is turned, you know, I'm flexing it, so I grab the head, you know, with my leg, with my foot, the back of the leg. See? It goes over the
wrapping
top.
Wrapping it around his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit some Aikido.
They definitely sold you in the trailer as, I remember, world kickboxing champion Olivier Gruner. So that was a big selling point.
Yeah, it's we're all world champion, you know, like I said in the movies, right?
Yeah.
So it's what's funny about this is like you get a title and then you use it to promote yourself, right? Or and they use it to the max, you know. The thing is sometimes, you know, the people who are writing things are writing it over the top, you know. So
yeah, it's all part of the hype.
It was one of the selling points, but remember, you got to perform also as well. So if you said you know you're world champion and you go over there and you do it, and they look at it and say, that's not good, you know, the guy is not world champion, he's not good, you know, he's not good. So that's not going to sell.
Now, did you find it hard to adapt from real fighting to fake film fighting in any way, or was it okay?
Well, no, it was not okay, because you know when we train, as you know, especially for fighting, we hit each other, right? So, like, especially the body shot, even the face we hit. But obviously, when we do films, we don't punch each other in the face. We just try to keep distance. But the body shots, for me, it was really important that I can hit the body shots, because there's a big difference. Somebody reacts, you can see that the foot is not going to the clothes. You don't, you know, you can't tell it's fake. Like Bruce Lee, if you look at it, when he threw a side kick, he really threw it and he goes through it. Yeah. That's really important. So we had kind of some issues with the stunt guys.
Mm.
It's one of those things where they are used to actors. At that time, you know, the movie business was so different. You know, when you make a film, you need at least $2 million to make a film, because it was real film. It was not videotaped. So it cost a lot of money. Everybody was really professional. And I understand the things that we don't want to get hurt because we have to work tomorrow on another show.
Mm-hmm.
So I got it. I understand it. But I said, well, in that case, don't become a stuntman in my film. I don't want to hurt them. But, you know, they can put pads on themselves. And as a fighter, we get hit every day. I mean, every day I go to the gym. I mean, we get hit, boom, boom, in the body shot, you know, in the face too. So
that's part of being a martial artist, isn't it?
Exactly.
You have to condition your body.
Exactly.
Well, I'll just tell you the way it was for me, Olivier. I started, and it was lucky for me, I started in Hong Kong movies.
Oh, yeah.
So my introduction to filming fight sequences was quite hardcore, and getting hit was commonplace. And for sure, if you're getting hit to the body, it's, you know, not 100%, but you know, at least 80, and it is what it is. And of course, you try not to hit anyone in the face unless somebody asks me very nicely. I might say okay, but for the most part, so my introduction to it was from Hong Kong. So when I went to America, I know where you're coming from. But for fight movies, that, you know, you've got to get stuck in.
Yeah. So, but if you know the stunt community at that time, okay, fighting was not a big thing. Was not like something that, you know, it was more like the stunt. We're talking about falling. So if the guy does a high fall, he would get $5,000, you know, just for one high fall.
Yeah.
So this is when you were a stuntman at that time, it was not a fighting stunt guy, the stuntman. So it was so different.
Well, you hear stories about stuntmen talking about Bruce Lee being a bit, you know, tough on them and everything. But I just think it was stuntmen weren't clued in, most of them, to the speed and rhythm of a martial artist.
Good point.
At that point, it was a different vibe. I said, well, yeah, you've hit him with that one.
Yeah,
you've hit him good with that one.
Yeah, I got
it. That looks like it was with the heel, Olivia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But they were okay.
Okay.
I mean, I think they switched the stunt guys and they brought some others, you know, guys who could fight.
Yeah, I don't think he wanted a second one of them.
So I hit here a little bit, you know. It was not pushed, but it was like, so this guy... Yeah, so if you want to do like those kicks, you got to hit because you got to have the rebounds on the from his body, you know.
Most of the fighting was done in long takes, filmed from different angles with cameras.
No, it was pretty short and pretty fast, you know.
So this sequence here, you would do this whole little piece,
yep.
all in one, like all the way up to there, maybe.
Yep, exactly.
That's a pretty nice stunt from this guy.
Oh, you know, this guy was. Some guys were really good. You know, look at me.
Yeah.
See, I hit him. No. You know.
Yeah. Well, he needs you to hit him on that one. He needs a bit of speed to get over the gate, over the fence, the white picket fence.
But again, you know, some of the guys were not fast enough for my kids. So I had. You'll see what I'm talking about. I had to slow down.
And who did you choreograph the fights with?
Jeff Imada.
So Jeff Imada. So he went on to big things.
Yeah, Jeff was excellent, you know. But you know, some guys were pretty slow. Some guys were good because we needed a lot of Latinos, you know, for this show. And the stunt community didn't have a lot of Latinos, so they had to bring some of them. You know?
I like this little kicking section here. I like. Now you stop the hand there, very precise. That's cool.
That's funny, I haven't seen this, but...
Yeah. Angel Town, man. So how many days would you spend on a... Was this a whole night of fighting or two?
No, it's one night.
Three?
No, one night.
One night, yeah.
One night, yeah. We went pretty fast because those guys were really good, you know. And Jeff was on top of it, so Jeff was really good. He's a really good stunt coordinator.
That's really nice there. I like this. Bang. Bosh. Nice and accurate.
Boom.
How did it do when it came out, Angel Town?
So we had the biggest screen average in the country. So, of course, we have a premiere. So the premiere, my parents are there and stuff. So it was great, you know. And then we got the release. So we had a lot of... TV ads all over the place, really good. And so then we have the release and I'm in Westwood. I go to Westwood to see, I wanted to check it out, you know, how the film will do, you know. So I go and I walk in the street and I see a huge line. And I was thinking that was for a Clint Eastwood movie, you know, that new movie came out. And I'm talking about all around the building. I said, holy moly, man. So I go over there and I check, you know, I go around and, I'm going to go and see Angel Town, you know? And I look at it, that was for Angel Town. I was like, oh, no way. So I get my tickets and I go inside the theater, right? And so nobody knows me at that time because, you know, I mean, they saw me maybe on TV because, you know, all the ads, but really, I walk in the street, nobody recognizes me, period, right? I go in the theater and I watch a whole film and see the reaction of the people, right? And so it was really well received, you know. So, and I come out of the theater not thinking it's me on the screen. I totally forgot,
yeah.
You know, because you say,
oh,
no,
yeah.
No. And I swear to God, this is where you realize your life changed. Because everybody looks at you and say, hey, that's him. Hey, that's a guy. That's a guy. That's a guy. I'm like, oh, shit, you're right. So I start to walk a bit faster, faster. And I'm scary, I tell
you.
Because you don't know.
It's scary, right? It's
right?
Scary.
Is it?
Yeah, because you forget.
Yeah, and you don't know what, you know, do they like me? Maybe they hate me. You don't know what they're gonna.
Yeah.
It's not like guys say, "Hey, man, great job." It's like it's not like you want to fight. Hey, great job, man. You won it. This is different. This So it was interesting.
Yeah, I remember being in Serbia, and you know, some parts of the world you're more famous than others.
Yeah,
turns out in Serbia, they a lot of people knew who I was, and I had a kind of look like I looked like Boyka, which is I'm most famous for that character that I did with Isaac. And I've gone to the cinema to watch King Kong, and I'm getting my popcorn. I've just gone there on my own because I'm bored. And then somebody's like, "Boyka," and I'm like, "Oh yeah, how you doing?" And then he starts going, "Boyka, it's Boyka." And then you feel the whole cinema just look at you, and I'm there with my popcorn, like, "Jesus Christ, what's going on?" And then I go up and I'm standing in the queue, and everyone's like looking at me still. And I just said to the usher, "Mate, can you just let me in? I don't want to be out here alone in the queue." And then I've sat down in the cinema, just feeling like people looking at me the whole time, thinking I just want to go home.
Don't you hear this also? People are talking.
It's, yeah.
You can only understand what you're saying.
You feel the energy. You feel the energy on you. It can be weird.
I know. Angel Town.
Los Angeles. L.A., city of the angels. Angel Town, place where a stranger can forget the past.
They did a limited release in the theater, but he went all over the place, all over the U.S. So, and then we did a huge, we went to two cities a day. So we were traveling to promote the film. You know, that was hard for a month for the really release.
Yeah, so that's a massive promotional tour.
Yeah, that was tough. That was
People
don't understand, you know, signing autograph is not and be around the public. It's exhausting, you know.
Yeah, because you've got to be switched on the whole time.
Yeah, and you have to always be nice, you know. You got to be. Sometimes you can't be yourself because you know you're tired, you're exhausted, you need a drink, and then you totally forgot because you go from there's a line of people lined up, so you can't let them say, "Oh, I'm going to take a break." You know, you can't. You're going to keep going. People are waiting.
Yeah, take a break. He's just took a break. He's an asshole. That
what an asshole. Take a break.
Wow, dare you take a break? I've been in this queue for hours.
Can I go to the bathroom? No, you're going to keep going.
You sign those autographs, you selfish bastard.
He's such an idiot, man. I don't like that. I ban him.
But these are good problems to have. These are good problems to have. There could be worse.
So it took approximately over a year and a half before I started Nemesis. So in the meantime, I was supposed to do Kickboxer, but Albert Pune decided to go with somebody else than me at that time, right?
Which Kickboxer? The first one?
Yeah. Kickboxer. No, the second one.
The second one. Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. And then, so...
I didn't know that. Is that new? Is that common knowledge? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So Albert Pume, because Imperial called me and said, "Olivier, we got a great film for you. You're going to be super happy. I'm telling you, you're going to be." And I said, so I said, "What is it?" They said, "Well, we'll tell you when we are in negotiation right now." Because Imperial had a contract with me. We signed a 5-year deal, right? And I was supposed to do my second picture. So, but Albert Pume didn't want to do it with me, went with somebody else for whatever reason. I don't know, you know. So, you know.
Right. But then his next film was Nemesis, right?
Exactly. So we had a little
kind
of a friction there. It's like, well, you didn't want me for that, but now you need a job, so you want to use me to get to Imperial Entertainment. That was my thought. It's like, but you know, it's like, maybe I can do something else on Nemesis.
Nemesis was much better than Kickboxer 2. Let me tell you.
So, it was good at the end, you know. But, you know, I had like this feeling that I got hurt a little bit, you know, this, he doesn't like me, why? You know, and actually it was better for me to do Nemesis. So you're going to have three trainers. You're going to have one for the physique, you know. So I went with Eric Sternlich. Eric Sternlich is a PhD at UCLA. Excellent guy. I mean, he taught me a lot. I spent 3 days with him, 3 days, night and day. And the regimen that he made me go through was training 6 hours a day, okay? but it was divided. We wake up at 5:30 in the morning, have a coffee, because the coffee breaks down the fat cells. Doesn't eliminate the fat cell, but it breaks down, the caffeine breaks down the fat cells. And we jump on the bike for 45 minutes. And then I had my my heart rate monitor, and it has to be between 135 to 145. It has to be between that range for me to burn the maximum fat. Mm. And we do that for 45 minutes. When we're done.
So you can't go above 145 that you're not going to burn.
Now it's going to be
all. Would you not burn as much fat, or would it be catabolic to the muscle?
Exactly. So you're going to start using muscle, burning muscle instead of fat. This is the.
Okay.
So then we stop and we eat breakfast. Okay. After breakfast, I have a little break so I can study the script. And then from there, we go to the gym. So we go to lift weights. And now we do that for an hour and a half. Okay. As soon as I finish training, we have oats, applesauce, and oats and peanut butter. And the reason is because my blood sugar goes low after you train hard, you know, especially with weights. Mm-hmm. So he wants to bring my blood sugar a little bit higher. So that's why we do that right after training. After that,
so having the carbs after training.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And after that, we have lunch and another two meals after that. And we do one more cardio. So we have like 1 hour, we got an hour and a half, and then we got another hour, and later on we walk for an hour. So,
all right. Cardio. So three bouts of cardio throughout the day, and as long. So are you on the bike for the one where you've got to keep it between 135 and 145, or running?
Yeah, yeah. So running and on the bike. So sometimes we go, like in the morning, we do the biking, and then we do the weights, and then we do the running again, and then we do the walk. And the walk, there's no time. We don't measure our heart rate. It's just to walk. So the meal we
and
eat.
Your diet was very specific, was it?
Yes. Six times a day. So we had like, we got the breakfast. Then we got the oatmeal. This is considered like a meal. And then we have, four more meals after that. But they're very tiny. So you have a breast of chicken, some rice, and some salad, you know, oil and vinegar. And that we eat like that all the time. But it's a very small portion. So,
yeah. So when you did Nemesis, what would you say your body fat percentage was?
4%.
4%.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was very
did you feel okay? Did you feel okay? Like you had energy, or did you feel
I had a lot of energy, but if I miss a meal, I was a bitch. I mean, I'll admit it.
Yeah.
I was not easy to do it because you are on the edge, you know, you are like starving all the time. And if you miss a meal, you totally forgot about that you're hungry because you're working, but your mind, your head, you're gonna have a headache. And that's what gets you into, you know, bodybuilder knows that very well. You guys do, you know, when you train, you know, physically, you've done it. So
thanks for the tip.
To prepare for his role, Gruner, a former kickboxing champion, went on a special training program.
It was very tough. I dropped down to 4% body fat, and it affects your nerves a lot. So sometimes my behavior was kind of weird, but that's the way it is when you are 4% body fat.
The thing is, like, I never stopped training. So that's really important, I think, for people like watching. I think it's really important to give them some motivation for being in shape, you know. And I think for me, it's a way of life. Okay. And I'm sure it is for you. It's a way of life. So my training is so important. I would not accept a job if I cannot train. So example, if you want me to work from A to B, how many hours, I'm going to ask for when do I'm going to be able to work. If it's too early in the morning, I can't work. And if it's too late at night, I'm going to be exhausted. I said, I don't accept the job. It doesn't matter if it's flying helicopters, if it's doing some security, it doesn't matter what it is. My training is the most important thing. That's it. That's part of my life. Because if I don't train, and I have to do at least 2 hours a day, okay? Because if I don't train, I don't feel good about myself. I feel that I didn't, you know, my day is not, no, is not done.
Now, Nemesis was a very big budget movie, right? They threw all the trimmings at this. I'm guessing because you're from the Navy and everything, you're wanting to do as many of your own stunts as you can.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about all that. You'll see. So this is in Fontana, and you can see that the rumble, it doesn't look dangerous, but guys got hurt on this. So this guy, Wolf, got hurt, got cut. Very unstable, very dangerous, and a lot of dirt inside the rocks, you know, because it's there was some stuff that we were not supposed to be around it anyway. So, yeah. But a lot of running on this, very unstable. So here I'm in my bag. If you look at
how are you accomplishing this?
Yeah. Oh, I have a pad in the back, right, to protect my back. And if you look, when I do the flip, my pants is ripped. Hold on. We'll see after when you do, when I do the flip. Keep going. There he goes. You see it?
Oh, ripped. Yeah. Right there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. You can see the pad, maybe. Oh, yeah. What? Is that sticking out of your rectum, Olivier? Come on.
I'm sorry. You know, it's...
Brilliant.
Oh, boy. So I remember those things.
At least they didn't have to train you how to fire weapons.
No, I was okay with that. You know, things change a lot also with weapon, the way you hold it now. You know, there's a lot of evolution in weapons. So I got trained by a guy who used to be in the CIA, and he showed me a couple of techniques, you know, like with the two guns like this. It was interesting.
Was this fun here with the explosions?
Yeah, but it was extremely dangerous. So if you look at the explosions here, they're right on my butt, and I receive a lot of shrapnels. So I was bleeding every day on this thing.
Oh, really? So did you want to be this close to that? Or was it just, I'll do whatever you want me to do sort of thing?
Exactly. I didn't ask any questions. He said, you got to run from here to there and I'll take care of the thing. So sure, okay. But the guy was really good. I mean, they were L.A. listers, you know, the guys who work on this film.
I miss the practical effects, man. You can't beat it. It's just the best.
Yep. Practical effects.
Now talk to me about this little fight scene here. I'm guessing that they shot it all in one shot, but they've edited into it.
So that's Bobby Brown.
That's Bobby Brown. You're okay. You hit him on the shoulder there, so it should have been worse.
Because he turned himself. So I'm okay.
Lovely back kick though, Olivier. Lovely back kick. So this was all done in one take, moving.
Yeah.
Was it supposed to play as one angle, maybe? I think it would have been cool if we just stuck with it like that.
You know what? They put the Steadicam and they roll it, you know, and I do it three times and then they film different angles, you know. The good thing in that time, I didn't have to be worried about the stunts, you know. I have to focus more on my character. So that was So this scene is pretty neat too, you know, going
the,
through
the practical, that's what I'm talking about, the practical effects and the SFX that were employed on this are really good.
That was a tricky scene to put together. I was on a cable.
How did they do that? So you're on a cable and they're dropping you through the roofs?
Yeah.
This sort of thing here with the practical effects is what I'm talking about. It's just, it just looks so good.
I mean, they spent so much money on how many rounds did they shoot on this thing? It was amazing, you know.
Is this you or not?
No, that's Bobby Brown.
No, okay.
It won't. I was not.
He looks a lot like you.
Yeah. But I tell you a few things. Like Bobby Brown showed me a few things.
Bobby looks exactly like you. He's such a good double for you, isn't he?
Yeah, he was perfect. Yeah, he was great. So the high falls, he did all the high falls. I was not allowed to do any of those.
Well, if you get hurt, then it's game over, isn't it?
So I wanted to do my own stunt. So I asked Bobby Brown to do this stunt, and he looked at me, and I can see that the stunt guys were not happy. And I was wondering why. It's because every time I take a stunt from them, they make less money. So, for example, if I do a high falls, maybe they're going to be getting $5,000. And for me, just not thinking about it, because I didn't know that. As I do a high falls, and then this poor guy, you know, instead of making 20 grand, he's going to make only 10 grand, you know.
This is my favourite scene in the movie, by
the way. Oh, with the lady?
I'm sorry, but that is just genius. The way, look at her face.
She was awesome.
This bit here. It's infinitely watchable.
So it was always my dream to do a Western, because with my dad, we used to go and watch Clint Eastwood movies, you know, in Paris. So to do a Western, it was like, wow, that's, so they came and see me. My parents were there. They were up. We put them in the movies and in this movie, Savat. And Isaac is right. So great. I mean, Isaac and his partner is the DP guys. They were so funny together. We laughed so hard. I mean, it was great. And him being a martial artist also, it helps a lot, because he knows, you know, and that makes a big difference. You know, when the director is a martial artist, it helps.
Oh, yes. He knows how to shoot it.
Yeah.
Now, what was your body fat percentage on this? As low as Nemesis or not as much?
No, not as low. I think I was 6%.
Yeah. It's very hard to stay that way for so long. It's not healthy, is it?
No, because they're on the edge. And I had headaches all the time. It was not fun. So the guys, you know, when you do stunts, the stunt guys are so important, you know, because they're really selling the movement that you're doing. So sometimes, you know, it's really good. Like, these guys was excellent. He was a funny guy. So we use it to our advantage. You know, that scene was not choreographed, but it was put it together because the guy was so funny looking. It was great. And these guys,
I like this bit where you're just kicking them. That's nice.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning. We had to do this scene with Ian Ziering. So, and Ian Ziering is supposed to stay in the barn, and we rehearse it because Isaac is very professional. He stays in the barn, and I'm there, and I call it Ken. It's the end of the film. Ken. He's inside the barn. It's burning, and I'm supposed to go over there and pick him up and drag him out. For some reason, this is what happened. I'm there. Ken, we're shooting now. Ken. I turn, Ian is right there. Boom! My nose all the way up here. I mean, up here. So there's no way.
Did he kick a punch? What was it?
No, it was just, I think his head. That was it.
Oh, right. Yeah, just a crazy. Yeah.
Boom! All the way up here. So I know I'm bleeding, you know, thing is bleeding. So I just, you know, blood is not a big deal. So we do, because we bleed a lot. So we do this. And then, and the guys, people are looking at me like this, and they don't know what to say. And every time I look at somebody, people are like this.
And that's not good. When you see that reaction, you know, it's not
it's
good.
It's like, you know, your nose is perfect. And then, can you imagine your nose becomes like this? And now you can't.
I'd go straight to the hospital.
What's up? So wait, because I get it worse. So I'm working a little bit, and then at the end, you know, of the day, I look, and the guy said, you know, Rodrigo, it's so bad. You can't keep it like that. Don't worry about it. You can't play bad guys now. So screw you, man.
Gentlemen, please be professional. Give me the
good. What's amazing about this is that I trained with a Mossad, an Israeli guy, and he showed me how to use anything around yourself as a weapon. So, example, I'm going to use a pen and a credit card.
Is before Jason Bourne, right?
Oh, way before Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
Yeah, so credit card.
Yeah, so that's like legit then. You could do that.
Yeah. But you got to, the way you hold the credit card has to be specific. And also the way you make it sharp, there's a specific. Yeah, so this, I love this scene. This is one of my favorite fighting scenes, I think. Because it's non-stop.
Yeah, bang. It's non-stop. It's brutal, using the environment well as well.
Yeah, exactly. So the guy who, when we choreographed this, it was pretty... I like to work with stunt guys or stunt coordinator that they're going to work with me also.
You know, looks like a powerful sidekick there. Bang.
Yeah, well, this guy, they learned their lesson. You know, they know I'm going to hit the body shot. But...
They pad up.
Yeah, they can put pads on it.
Yeah, a smart stunt guy always pads up.
Yeah. You don't have to play tough, you know.
I wanted to talk about the circuit because it's a few years later, and what I really admire about you is we talk about how you got into jiu-jitsu, but at a time when the UFC was, I guess, is this early 2000s?
Yeah, it was starting. The UFC was not big at that time. We just started, you know.
But you're employing a lot of jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, in this fight sequence, which I think is really cool. At a time when not everyone was doing so.
Yep.
So when did you start training in jiu-jitsu?
So as soon as I saw Royce Gracie, you know, just beating up big guys, I said, okay, this time for me just to move on to something else.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he was so good. And so I started with Exon Gracie, you know, when he was on Pico. He was doing that out of the garage, you know. And then I started training with a bunch of other people, you know. Because actually, Aziz's gym first, Exon Gracie's gym, and that was in Brentwood. So, and obviously, goes to jiu-jitsu moves, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the first circuit. So what's interesting about the circuit, Gerald came to see me in Toronto when I was doing Code Name Eternity for Warner Brothers. And he asked me if I wanted to do a movie, and he says, and I said, well, yes, but the only thing I want to do is a martial arts underground fighting. I'm going to shoot in LA. And he says no to everything. I said, no, we can't, it's too expensive, LA and stuff. And I said, well, then we're not going to do it. And then 2 months later, he called me and said, okay, let's go and write the screenplay together. So we got together, he stayed at my place, and then we started writing the screenplay, and we came up with a circuit. Life is really an adventure, because you never know. Some people, you know, are too worried about the future. You know, you got to live life and just enjoy it, you know. And the timing is really important for everything. So you cannot be jealous for people, you know, and that's really important for the public, you know, to understand that. Yeah. Because the timing, it's not because the guy is better than you, or because I'm better than you, or whatever, but the timing was there at that time. So we got really lucky. But when time comes, we were ready to show that we can do the job. And that's really important. So, example, if you spend a lot of time doing something and you don't get a job, so it happened a lot, you know, for the fire department. Some guys, they want to be firemen and they can't get into the department, but they keep going. And sometime, and one day it's going to happen that everything is going to collide and you're going to be able to be accepted. So again, for the film is the same thing. You know, you can spend years, you know, waiting for your time, but the timing has to be perfect. You know,
there's many things that I wanted to talk to you about flying helicopters and the tactical gun work that you do, but I'm afraid that we've just ran out of time. Maybe we're going to have to do another episode.
Yeah, exactly.
But listen, man, I've followed your career for so many years. I really appreciate you coming and talking to me on The Art of Action. And I know that people will have really enjoyed listening to you. Well, so thanks, man.
Same for you. You know, like, I mean, you're on top of your game. You know, it's pretty amazing that you're doing this, you know, which is great. I think it's really rewarding that the fact that you're spending your time interviewing us. We should be interviewing you, you know, but you are humble.
The only reason I became an action star was so that I could start a podcast and interview my favorite action stars. So there you go.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, cool.
Yeah, cool. It's great talking to you, Olivier. You're a great guy, and it's you're a fun guy, man. Okay. Thanks, buddy.